Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, a Monday May Day edition. Dom, it's May Day, a day without Latinos here in the state of Wisconsin.
Happy May Day to you, Evan, on the board, our fair audience. Great to be with you on this dreary Monday.
Dreary? No one's tuning in for dreary, man. We're nothing but sunny skies around here. Real quick, our friends at Voces de la Frontera have sent me this press release. May Day, 2-day general strike. Days without Latinxes and immigrants on May 1st and 2nd. So it ain't done yet, Dom. A little bit of information from their press release. Monday, May 1st is a national day of action for immigrant rights movement. Nationally, organizations part of the FIRM, Fair Immigration Reform Movement Network, are escalating pressure on the Biden administration to deliver on promises, to roll back anti-immigrant policies from past administrations, and pass long overdue protections for immigrants through executive action. Dozens of actions are planned across the country. And in Wisconsin, Voces de la Frontera, statewide members, including the Voces youth members of Youth Empowered in the Struggle, they call that group Yes Dom, and allies are gearing up for a 2-day march, May 1st, today in Milwaukee, and May 2nd, where I'm originating from, Dom, here in Madison. May Day's focus will center on the statewide campaign to restore driver's licenses and tuition equity. The march will also feature leaders from local school lunch justice campaign led by Yes, Voces' youth arm, as well as immigrant and refugee speakers on national demands on Biden to protect immigrant and refugee rights. Dom, a day without Latinos. I tell you what, Christy Newman Ortiz, I have always been impressed by Voces de la Frontera and the actions they take. I remember one in Milwaukee. I think it was back in 2017, Dom. Over 25,000 participated that day. I have seen days in Madison here on the southwest side of the Capitol. Can't wait to peek out the window up State Street tomorrow from the new location and see what sort of turnout they get here in Madison. I've seen up to 20,000 or more for those sort of activities here in Madison. And I can tell you what, many, many of these workers, they came in from the farm where you used to work, Dom.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, that's going to be tough on the farmers up there in outstate Wisconsin, all the dairy farms. Big, big worker population, Latinos.
And I suspect there might be a few service industries, you know, let's call them restaurants and bars, that might utilize Latino labor as well. Maybe.
Lots of doubt there. Journal Sentinel also reporting on this event. I'll point this one out. High school student calls for better school lunch. Jeffrey Payne, 16-year-old student at the Milwaukee Marshall High School, stood with a megaphone shouting, May Day. Payne marched for better school lunches, calling the current meal offerings atrocious, and also to support friends who are immigrants. A survey of more than 1,000 MPS students by Youth Empowered in the Struggle, Yes, as Crudy voted, a youth arm of Voces, found that the quality of school lunch was the, quote, most pressing issue, unquote, for those surveyed.
Yeah, man, if you can't get a decent meal in your belly, it's pretty hard to learn much. I had to eat out of the clown's head today.
See, you know, it's tough.
It's going to be a bad show, you know?
Yeah.
I'll be miserable because of the weather and the bad lunch. Dom, you know, wanted to talk about some bad governance, or at least a bad look. A guy who kind of leads with plug the meter. Pay me, just pay me. Or, you know, pay me politically through donation. Why is Wisconsin's own Scotty Fitzgerald? And he used to be the Senate majority leader here in the state of Wisconsin, Dom. And today he caught the attention, and you brought it to my attention, Dave Zweifel over at the Cap Times. Dom.
Trump.
Pants.
Yeah, he is the most Trumpy of all Wisconsin Republicans. Was he not?
Grothman actually got ahead of him just a little bit. It's a close race, but I think Grothman's there.
Well, technically, Fitzgerald didn't win election until after Donald Trump was out of office. You know, the same election. And, of course, he promptly said, invalid election. My guy should be the president.
How's that going, Fitzy?
Setting aside the fact he won election for the very first time on the same ballot. But, you know, setting that aside, here's what the op-ed has to say. When U.S. Rep. Scott Fitzgerald was leading the Republican troops at the state Senate majority leader, he could always be counted on to do the bidding of the big boys. He helped swat down campaign finance reform, engineered tax cuts for those in the top income brackets, rallied his colleagues to pass tax breaks for manufacturers and corporate farms, conspired with then-Governor Scotty Walker, I'll call him Walker instead of Wanker now, Dom, to draw the most gerrymandered political maps in the United States and thwarted expansion of health care coverage for the poor. And that's just for starters. Anything that bolsters the wealthy and penalizes those at the lower rungs were his forte. It's the big boys, after all, who make hefty contributions to his election campaigns. And now that he's in the U.S. House of Representatives, first elected in 2020 to represent the heavily Republican 5th District when retired James Sensenbrenner held 40 years. Fitz, as he's known, oh, I've called him worse than that, Don, hasn't changed his stripes. One of his first votes as a member of Congress was to join 147 other Republicans to overturn the 2020 election, claiming it was stolen from Donald Trump, which helped to set the stage for the January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. The only other Wisconsin congressional Republican to join was 7th District Rep. Tom Tiffany, known principally as Polluter's Best Friend. Toxic Tom, they call him, don't they, Dom? U.S. Senator Ron Johnson came close, but changed his mind after rioters smashed into the seat of democracy.
You know, they barely went outside the lines. Crudy, after the stolen election lies fizzled, Fitzgerald is now turning his attention to subjects closer to his heart. Last week, he issued a press release announcing that he has joined the ranks with other House Republicans to damage the 12-year-old Consumer Finance Protection Bureau. This is the agency that was created along with the Dodd-Frank law to clamp down on risky behavior by the nation's financial industry, which was responsible for plunging the U.S. into an economic crisis at the end of George W. Bush's administration. Millions of people lost their financial nest egg and millions more lost their jobs. Fitzgerald believes the Bureau is too high-handed and is hurting small businesses. He derisively noted that the CFPB was architected, unquote, by Senator Elizabeth Warren and claimed that it is unaccountable to Congress and its regulations have proven time and again to be burdensome to businesses of all sizes. Yes, it has been burdensome to those who charge obscene fees and interest rates, saddle borrowers with extravagant late fees, and take advantage of every conceivable loophole to soak struggling consumers. In its first 10 years, the CFPB enforcement and supervisory efforts resulted in approximately $14.4 billion in relief for consumers and $1.7 billion in civil penalties. Has delivered economic redress to more than 183 million consumers and consumer accounts and received and processed over 3 million consumer complaints. But the finance and banking industries have been chafing at its oversight, and Fitzgerald is there to help them out. They're the ones, after all, who fill his campaign coffers. The nation's beleaguered consumers don't. Dave Zweifel writing at the Cap Times entitled Scott Fitzgerald, a true Wisconsin sellout. And with a headline like that, Crudy, I didn't even need to read it. I knew I liked it. And what a shocking, again, consider what we're going through right now. Of course, Jack Smith investigating January 6th. I mean, for this guy to come into office And then his first act is to, what, overthrow the election. Joins the 147 other Republicans to overthrow the elections. And as Weeple, you know, points out, oh, the election lies fizzled. Yeah, but that you can't take away the vote. It was BS then. It's BS now. And anyone that voted on that, they either were in on it and therefore are corrupt and should not hold office, or they were duped and ignorant and therefore should not hold office. I'm talking to you, Fitzy.
Let's not forget, on his way out the door here in the great state of Wisconsin, he let the false Trump electors in the door, did he not?
Certainly did.
Some of the reporting, including
that staffer, apparently, right?
Melanie Conklin, imposter electors tied to Fitzgerald, Clayfish, and Jarkow. This reporting came back in January of 2022 when Senator Chris Larson and Rep. Jonathan Brostow asked the Milwaukee County District Attorney to investigate 10 fake electors who sent documents to Congress, certifying the votes of Wisconsinites went to Donald Trump. The pair of Wisconsin legislators also began looking into who reserved the room in the Capitol where the fake electors met to put their signatures on those documents. Potential charges against the group of imposter electors. And where are the charges? I asked Josh Call, including forgery, falsely acting as public officials, misconduct in public office, and conspiracy to commit criminal acts, as well as potential violations of federal law, according to attorney Jeff Mandel of Law Forward and Crudy, the nonprofit. Well, Law Forward is. Crudy's in it for the profit.
He's for profit.
Larson and Brostow assert that whoever reserved the room for the Republicans may be complicit in what they deem a likely crime. Through an open records request, Tom, Larson received evidence that it was then Senate Majority Leader Scotty Fitzgerald who reserved the room. Fitzgerald was elected to Congress in the same election whose results he helped challenge. The congressman owes it to his constituents and the American people at large to condemn the actions of the fraudulent GOP electors. Failing to do so is an admission that he supports their attempt to overthrow the legitimate election of President Biden, including Wisconsin, which Biden won by nearly 21,000 votes, Larson wrote in a statement. As lawmakers who have a special responsibility to respect the outcome of our elections. Well, anyways, come back with us. More Devil's Advocates. Fitzy, you're no good. You're no good. Devils, we're pretty good. Just listen. 844-967-2789 or join us on the phones.
Trump. Pants.
When they go low, we get high. The Devil's Advocates.
And we are back from the 420 break. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Be sure to check us out on the socials, on Twitter at Devil Radio, on Facebook at the Devil's Advocates Radio. Of course, on the phones at 844-967-2789.
Dominic Fitzgerald is not your congressman, is he?
No.
That's Gwen Moore, correct?
Yeah, Gwen Moore saying she's back in the game, baby. She's still running.
That's excellent. A little bit more about Fitzgerald. Let's not forget. He won his race in 2020, right? And on his way out the door as the Senate Majority Leader, he helped enable the meeting of the false Trump electors here in the state of Wisconsin. Hell, he reserved the room for them. And Fitzgerald was sworn in on January 3rd, that'd be of 2020. And among his first acts as a newly minted congressman was to vote against certifying the election for Biden on January 6th.
The same election that he won on.
That he became a congressman, but, you know, his ballots were just fine. But it was rigged as to Trump. That came after the deadly attack by insurgents who invaded and trashed the U.S. Capitol in an effort to subvert democracy and the peaceful transition of power. Fitzgerald could not be reached for comment, nor has he made a public statement on the matter. This is 2 years later. Has Fitzy ever accounted for his decision to vote against the peaceful transfer of power?
Not that I've heard. That doesn't mean he hasn't, but I think we'd find it. Let's look.
Jonathan Brostow believes Fitzgerald knowingly aided Wisconsin's fake electors in an effort to subvert the results of the presidential contest. A quote from Brostov. It seems extremely unlikely that any of this is a coincidence, he says, and adds that given his oaths of office on both the state and federal level to protect the Constitution, Fitzgerald needs to be held accountable and should immediately resign. He ain't resigning, Dom. I'm hopeful that justice will be done, and I'll keep pushing for it. And according to Larson's statement, again, Chris Larson, a Democratic state senator, the records received from the office of the state Senate Sergeant-at-Arms indicate that the staff from then-Senator Fitzgerald's office reserved the meeting space from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. in the state parlor, room 201 Southeast, on behalf of the Republican Party of Wisconsin. The Capitol was closed to the public due to COVID-19. Held on, we were cited that very same week for entering that very same building, were we not?
We certainly were.
But here's the quote. But legislators were able to reserve meeting space for constituents and others interested groups as they saw fit. All indications are that Congressman Fitzgerald saw fit to provide space in the Capitol for a slate of 10 Republicans purporting to be authorized presidential electors from Wisconsin to meet and produce fraudulent documents claiming falsely that the 2020 election in Wisconsin was won by Donald Trump. I think most or all of that is entirely true, Dom. Scotty Fitzgerald, you're up to your albino eyebrows in this.
Well, another reminder from the AP, Scott Bauer, back on January 14th of 2021. Fitzgerald said he didn't know if President Donald Trump incited the riot at the U.S. Capitol and wants a full investigation to find out who motivated the mob. I don't think we know yet, Fitzgerald said. There has to be more to this entire episode, and it needs to be investigated top to bottom to see who was involved and exactly what motivated them to get to where we were, which was a very, very frightening day. I'm not making any excuses. I'm just saying that that's why we need a thorough investigation, Fitzgerald said. It's just hard for me to believe right now that the entire crowd was somehow fired up just by the speeches of the day to take action. I'm not going to say there wasn't an element of them. So the investigation, I mean, certainly, and I hope that investigation, as it goes on right now, apparently not, you know, from the Wisconsin Attorney General call, but certainly Jack Smith is investigating, also investigating these fake electors. And you were part, whether you like to admit it or not, Fitzy, you were part of the fake elector scheme. They wouldn't have been in the building if it were not for your efforts.
Dominic, we got a new friend joining us very, very soon. He is Packer beat reporter Mike Clemens. A new addition here to the Civic Media team. He's going to join us 4:30, bring us some insights from Titletown, all the new picks. He's got sound nice from all the new players. But before we do that, we got time for a couple of our callers at 844-967-2789. Jack from Merrimack. Welcome back, Jack. What do you got for us?
Hey, Jack.
Oh, man. Some days I just don't know where to start. I was just really overjoyed when Senseless Brenner decided to retire. But the one thing I will say for him was that he held regular town halls. I know because I spoke at three or four of them. Now, of course, he either minimized what I was saying or did absolutely nothing about it. But the point is, at least he did allow citizen input. As far as I know, Fitzgerald has done absolutely zilch. He was gerrymandered in place in the 2020 election. I think that was when he won, initially. And unfortunately, at that point, he was my congressperson, gerrymandered across three county lines, I believe, Jefferson, Waukesha, and Milwaukee County. And fortunately, at this point, I think the re-gerrymander from the latest Republican gerrymander was put Glenn Moore as my congressperson. And I'm going to tell you, I really think that she is definitely my preferred congressperson.
Well, you can't possibly have Glenn Moore in Merrimack. I mean, you can claim her.
Merrimack. No, I have a house in West Dallas.
Oh, okay.
And that's where I vote. that's where I vote. So she is and my wife's place is in Merrimack, and of course Mark Pocan is in that district. So we have both the only two good Congress people, as far as I know.
Let me tell you a quick story about Fitzgerald. I met the guy at a WisPolitics luncheon. I questioned him after the Access Hollywood tape came out, and I said, "Is there anything Trump could do that would turn you against him?" And he just looked at me red-faced and did not respond. Well, let's not forget, after Trump lost the state of Wisconsin, Fitzgerald was willing to participate in the false Trump elector scheme. Crime, I would assert, and vote to overturn the will of the Wisconsin people. If that ain't a Trumpster, I don't know what is. Come back. Mike Clemens and the Devil.
The Devil's Advocates.
I'll tell you a story.
Making radio great again.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Got a new friend to introduce to you, our fair audience. He is Packer Beat reporter Mike Clemens. Mike, welcome to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Hi, Mike. Hi, Dom. How are you guys doing?
Excellent.
Hey, good, man. How you doing?
Mike, how long you been covering Packers events at Lambeau Field, man? You got a desk at Lambeau. I am quite envious. How long you been doing this gig?
18 years as a reporter, but actually I started when I was in my 20s. I was shooting TV camera, and we finished up on a Friday, and the guy said, "Hey, we got to cover the Packers now Sunday. You free?" I'm like, yeah. And so the next thing you know, I'm down on the sideline shooting camera for a Packers game like back in the 80s. So been doing a long time.
Mike, any of us that have ever done sideline work at Lambeau Field, no. You don't want to kneel on the sidelines. You better be standing in the back corner, because when those guys come plowing through, you don't want to be on your knees when like a fullback comes through, do you, Mike?
No. It's got to be, you know, you got to react, but you got to think ahead too, in terms of anticipate where the play is and when you're trying to take pictures of it. The access to the field is tougher and tougher every year, but it didn't help when 20 years ago that guy ran out into the Super Bowl pretending to be a referee, and they tore off his shirt, and he had the name of a casino on the back. Remember that? It was the same Super Bowl when Janet Jackson had her fashion mishap, but whatever. It's still amazing because, you know, how fast these guys are.
And, Mike, how many Super Bowls? You not only cover the Packers, you do the combine, you do the draft, but you also do the Super Bowl, with or without the Packers each year. How many consecutive Super Bowls have you been to?
18. I missed one or two there around 09. Then I covered 2010 when the Packers were there, and then everyone since then. I covered the first two Super Bowls in the 90s for the Packers with Favre and Holmgren and that group. And then, you know, we go every year because we get great stories from it. You get connections from the Super Bowl, the whole week leading up to it. That's the convention of the NFL. So you get all kinds of great backstories on players and coaches, and it really helps you going into the next season.
Mike Clemens, Packers beat reporter, and he's going to cover some Bucks and some Brewers. He's a new addition here at Civic Media. Well, Mike, I got to tell you, there's only sort of two times a year where I can get my wife to watch a little football, maybe Super Bowl time. And the draft, surprisingly, Thursday night for the NFL draft, my wife was fascinated. I was waiting for the Packers to draft 13th overall. And, you know, the stories about these young guys and their dreams and their mama's big dreams for them. Mike, something special about the NFL draft, isn't there?
Well, certainly there is, because for a lot of these guys, they've worked so hard. And you know, they don't just wake up one day and they're 6'5" and 272 pounds and they run a 40 and 4.58. They have to work at it. Like the Packers' first-round pick, 13th overall, this Lucas Van Ness out of Iowa. And he's actually from Barrington, Illinois, where he played hockey at that high school down there. That's in the Chicago area. So he's really more of a Blackhawks fan. But he got more interested in football. He figured out that was a way for him to perhaps make his dream of getting into the NFL. Now, the one knock against him coming out of Iowa and the Hawkeyes is that here he was as a stand-up outside linebacker or defensive end, How can he be a first-round pick if he never started a game at Iowa?
Here's how can he be a first-round pick if he never started a game at Iowa?
I'm glad you asked it.
Well, we have that audio. Here's what we asked him.
And we're going to need your help with this.
America Act has no future in the Senate.
That ain't it.
And it does nothing.
So we're going to need your help with this, Ebone. If you'd play cut number, I think you want 15 here.
I've gotten this question thousands of times over the last few months. And, again, I mean, it was I was very happy with the way, you know, my time at Iowa went. It's just, you know, the Iowa way. I had two great fifth-year seniors in front of me who, you know, did the time. And they, you know, they gave the years into their program. And Coach Ferentz has been there for about, I think he's his incoming 25th year. You know, he's got a way of doing things at the developmental program where they bring guys in. And, you know, I understood my role and my position. And I just did what Aubrey was asking me.
Now, Mike Clemens, I got to tell you, I was a skosh disappointed the Packers didn't pick up the kid from Ohio State. What's his Jackson Smith? You know who I mean. The guy they didn't draft. When did they go and get themselves a receiver, Mike? Did they get a receiver? They get somebody good?
They did. I wanted to talk a little bit more about Lucas.
Go ahead.
If we can. Yeah, here was the interesting thing. You know, the kid's speaking from his family's house in Fontana, and that's in the Lake Geneva area. That's their second home. And then you learn about all the different places he's been to kind of invest in this career. He's only 21 years old, Mike. And I thought this was interesting. There's a place that I know where Clay Matthews has gone to work out. David Bakhtiari, it's in Thousand Oaks. It's not far from the Rams facility, which I've been to, in Southern California outside of L.A. So I got to talk to Lucas Van Ness, the first-round pick for the Packers, and I said, I asked him this question, are you looking forward to working with Preston Smith and Rashawn Gary in Green Bay?
No doubt. Just my versatility of playing inside and outside, being able to move around in different spots of the field. I think I can – you know, find a weak spot for the defense and stuff like that. Great atmosphere in Lambeau Field. I mean, I cannot wait to get out there and you know, display what I can do to help the team and, you know, help the whole, you know, organization, you know, thrive. So I'm really thrilled to add value and do what I can to help the program elevate.
I don't think that was the right clip either, Mike. I think we wanted cut number 21, you and Lucas Van Ness.
Yeah,
it's awesome. And honestly, I was thinking about it. And when I was out in California, Kenny Clark was another guy that was out there training with us. You know, obviously at the time it was Aaron was out there with us, too. So I got, you know, a little involved in the culture and, you know, how things work around, you know, the Green Bay building and the drive and the motor and, you know, the play style you guys have. But, you know, from the get-go, my goal was to come in and learn from a veteran and, you know, really learn what it means to be a pro. And I'm just so happy I have, you know, some veteran guys to look up to and learn after, and I can't wait to get in the building and meet them.
Lucas, in your off-season workouts, you said it was with Kenny Clark. Was that in Thousand Oaks? Were there other Packers there?
Yes, that was in Thousand Oaks, California. And outside of Kenny, I mean, although no more, Aaron Rodgers was there in the facility as well at the time. So I, you know, spent a lot of time between them two. Sorry, what was the other question?
And coming out of Barrington, I know that Illinois was – pursuing you. What were some of the other schools? And talk about the crucial decision to go to Iowa.
Yeah, you know, I had a crazy recruiting process. You know, I post junior year in January, I went to my first ever training session, and from January 1st until you know, midsummer in June, you know, I was committed. So I had a quick 6-month process. You know, I started gaining traction. I went to a few camps. You know, that summer I went to Lindenwood. I did a camp at Iowa State, and Minnesota, you know, I started receiving offers everywhere I went. And it kind of started out small, you know, with both the Air Force and Naval Academy. I got all the Ivy Leagues just, you know, because I had pretty good academics in high school. I had like a 3.7 GPA coming out. Went to Iowa, received an offer from Iowa at the camp. Same with Minnesota, Illinois, and basically – I took an official visit just to Iowa because, coincidentally, you know, both my parents actually went to Iowa State. They're huge Iowa fans. I went to Iowa games when I was little, you know, touching helmets. on the sidelines. And I just loved, you know, that they took a chance on me. You know, that Coach Ferentz has been there for 20, you know, plus years, and the stability they had in the program developed players and makes them into NFL-style players, which obviously worked out for me pretty well. And I just knew what I was getting. From the moment I stepped on campus, it felt home, and I'm very happy that I went to the University of Iowa.
Our fine guest is Mike Clemens. He is a Packer beat reporter, Civic Media's own, and he's bringing us some exclusive sound from many of these brand new Green Bay Packers. Now, we jumped ahead of you, Mike. I apologize. We played the sound of wide receiver Jaden Reed. He was another Big Ten selection from the Packers. Not the greatest year to pick Big Ten schools, as far as I was concerned, but he is perhaps that speedy wide receiver for the other side of Christian Watson. Is that how you perceive the draft pick?
Yeah, that or the slot. He's 5'11", 191. He ran a 40 at 4.37, and I also think, Mike, he could be a candidate for punt returner too, which would be great, because Keyshawn Nixon, he can stay at kick returner, but they might be using him for nickel. But, you know, we also asked Brian Gutekunst about this because, you know, once again, the Packers invest that big first-round pick on defense, and they've gone with, like, defense 12 of the last 13 drafts. Now, this year they drafted 5 defensive players and 7 on offense, which, you know, we can break down a little bit. But Gutekunst was asked, you know, you invested in Preston Smith in free agency. You used a high draft pick, a first-round pick on Rashawn Gary. You paid Rasul Douglas, Jair Alexander. You've invested a lot of free agency money and draft picks on defense. What are your expectations for defense now heading into this season?
We have high expectations for that group, you know, and I think, you know, obviously Rashawn's coming off an injury, and but we have some young players that are really coming into their own. I mean, I think we're all excited to see what Quay can do, you know, Devondre Campbell. You know, we've had Jaw's been, you know, playing at a premier level for a long time. So, you know, Eric Stokes is going to be coming off an injury too. So getting all those guys back and really letting them go, I think we have very high expectations. They're a good group of guys, but, you know, there's so much work to be done between now and in games. Yeah, there's definitely high expectations, but, I mean, that's, you know, we wouldn't have it any other way.
Mike Clemens, while there's still time, let's make sure we get in the sound of the head coach, Matt LaFleur. He reacts to his 13 new rookies. That's going to be cut number 19. Mike, didn't mean to steal your thunder. Any other thoughts before we play the LaFleur sound?
Well, it's just that, you know, I just was looking at the depth chart. The Aaron Rodgers name is actually gone, you know? and you know, there's no Mercedes Lewis at tight end. You don't have Robert Tonyan. He signed with the Bears. Alan Lazard signed with the Jets. You've lost an awful lot of veterans. And so LaFleur was asked, you know, hey, you got 13 new players coming in this weekend. And what was your reaction to that?
You know, I haven't been a part of a draft where we've acquired 13 new players. So big time credit to Goody and his staff, and ready to get to work with these guys.
Hey, Mike, appreciate you coming on, man. I want to throw this out before we run out of time. Obviously, the longevity of giving you an opportunity to see some transitions, you know, go from Favre to Rodgers and now from Rodgers to Love. What was your sense from perhaps a fan standpoint or a coaching standpoint of those transitions? What was similar and what was different?
A lot of similarities between what Jordan Love has done the last 3 years and learning. But I can tell you, Dom, in the summer of 2007, I just watched every day of those practices, and I said, you know, I'm just going to forget everything that's in the past. I'm just going to evaluate this one guy over here with the 4 and the other guy with the 12. And by the time we got to Labor Day in September, 12 was the better quarterback, more athletic, faster, more accurate, and it was still taking Brett a little bit longer to get warmed up and to get things going. Now, they had a great season. They went 13-3. But then he throws the picks in the cold against the Giants, and the Giants go on to win the Super Bowl. Jordan Love's not where Aaron Rodgers was in 2007, but you know they've got a much more different system kind of offense, and I think that's what LaFleur is looking for. If the kid can just work within the system of the offense and use Aaron Jones and the veteran offensive line, they should be okay.
Now, they did draft a couple of tight ends, and hopefully that will help bolster the depth. Do we have time for tight end Tucker Kraft? He had a couple of drinks on draft night, didn't he, Mike?
Well, yeah, this is the kids out of Timber Lake, South Dakota, Mike. Population 509. He's worked very hard to get to this level and to be picked by the Packers. And so when his press conference was wrapping up, Sarah Quick is in charge of PR of the team and was sort of the moderator of these things. And here's how that went down.
Or even my second contract in the league.
All right, Tucker, thanks for your time. Appreciate you, and we look forward to meeting you.
Yes, sir. I'm sorry. Yes, ma'am.
That's okay. Thanks. We'll see you again.
I had a couple things waiting for my name to be called. very excited to meet you guys as well. I'm ready to be in Green Bay for sure. I'm so excited to be a Packer. Go Pack, go. Green and yellow already.
Well, Mike, that sounds like he's well on his way to being a good Wisconsinite. Can't wait to have you on the team. Mike Clemens, our new Packers beat reporter here at Civic Media. Thank you so much, Mike. More Devil's Advocate.
The Devil's Advocates, the fix for political junkies everywhere.
We're back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. You can always join us on the phones at 844-967-2789.
Dominic, want to thank our most recent guest, a newer friend of mine, but I'm getting to know the guy well, and I envy his fine job, Mike Clemens, Packers beat reporter. He does it for SiriusXM and the NFL Network, and now for Civic Media. And this guy is a real pro. You got to be a real pro or they don't give you a desk at Lambeau Field, Dom.
Right. Isn't that the job you wanted, Crudy?
I did. I was a sideline reporter. I was a photog. You know, I love me some Packers, Dom, but, you know, that's a hard job. It gets to be a long-ass assignment because, A, it's 17 weeks, plus it's the offseason, OTAs, you know, you got the combine, you got the draft, you got the playoffs, if you're lucky. And, of course, you know, you got training camp. And I can't wait until Mike is on the ground in Green Bay like 4 or 5 days a week bringing back training camp reports for us. Progress on Jordan Love. Can't wait, dude. And he'll be at the Brewer game soon. Packers, Bucks, Brewers reporter, Mike Clemens right here.
All right. Media. Yeah. Use those skills, cool baby. Like nice Mike. To meet Mike. Good cat.
Real guy. Yeah. 844-967-2789. I got to tell you, though, how do you draft a guy who's never started? And why would you not take the burner from Ohio State?
You're asking the wrong guy, man. I don't know.
Well, here's one thing I can tell you. Sort of the consensus I got from the pros, and I'm not pretending to watch the NFL like I once did, but the pros say, the Lions screwed it up, man.
Yeah. Oh, my poor Lions. Hey, man, they actually pulled it together a little bit last year. We'll have to see what happens this year.
We'll see.
We'll see. But the good news about this draft, I mean, his body hasn't been beat up as much. He had a couple of 5-year seniors ahead of him, so he's got some extra gas in the tank. Perhaps a greater upside, maybe.
Hercules, isn't that what they called me in college, Tom? Hercules.
Yeah, you and Tony Mandarich, man.
They called him Mondo, didn't they?
Didn't the Packers pass on Barry Sanders and take Tony Mandarich?
They did. Yes, they did.
The Lions, thank you for that.
He was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. He was a pretty amazing, like, the fact that science could make a human being that big. You know, like, you could just eat and better science your way. I mean, clearly the guy was on human growth hormones and steroids. Right. And, I mean, his eyes bulged out of his head, Dom. There had to be some towels there when you bring him into camp. And you look at the guy and his eyes are bulging out of his head. You're like, you know, there's some chemistry going on here.
Yeah, and that's the short term, right? I mean, obviously you get off that and it changes everything. And so there's the long term impact, there's a short term, you know, perhaps reward for it. I mean, he was Michigan State. I mean, he was just a monster managed, but of course that was ended up being a pretty big bust. So great to meet Mike and look forward to hearing more of his reports, especially on some of the other sports going on here on Civic Media.
According to Google, Tony Mandarich, I asked, where is Tony Mandarich now? Scottsdale, Arizona. I was just out there last weekend, Dom. And that steroid use has led to pain and addiction to painkillers. He has been sober now for 27 years. He lives a completely different life now, 55. Tony is a professional photographer and lives in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Well, right on.
The axe 315-pound NFL prospect, Tony Mandarich, now a photographer.
Now, this new draft, Lucas Van Ness, I haven't seen the stats. Big fella, I assume, given where he's at, but do you know any of the stats on him?
What do I know about Lucas Van Ness? Here's what I can tell you. He's the number one pick, 13th overall, Lucas Van Ness, edge rusher from Iowa. You know, the Packers took a lot of Big Ten guys. I always prefer when you take them from the SEC. Like, they're faster down south. I don't know why. They're just faster. But we got a couple of tight ends. The tight ends, who are they? Where are our tight ends? Get out of the way. I don't want to share any of this stuff.
According to the interwebs, Van Ness is 6'5 and weighing in at 276 pounds. I think he'll be able to peck on some more meat in the pros here.
And then the tight ends are Luke Musgrave. We heard of the wide receiver, Jaden Reed. He was the Michigan State guy. We played him out of order, I believe. And we also had tight end, had a couple beers before the call came. Tucker Kraft, perhaps Tucker Kraft beer. He is the tight end. Where did he come from? South Dakota State. And then we took a big kid from Auburn, our first SEC player. You want your D lineman from like Auburn, Alabama, like down south. Colby Wooden, D lineman from Auburn in the fourth round. Sean Clifford, he was another completely unexpected quarterback pick. This guy was not on the top 400 draft board for anybody. He didn't go to the combine because he wasn't considered enough of a prospect. And this guy got drafted by the Packers in the fifth round. And there were still good players on the board. So I really am starting to question that choice, Dom. You know, Sports Talk Live here. What do you got for us? 844-967-2789. Dontavian Wicks, a wide receiver from Virginia in the fifth round. And usually you can still get good players. I mean, a lot of the Packers' best receivers were like third to fifth round players. Carl Brooks, a edge rusher from Bowling Green. Now, the sixth round draft pick, my understanding, small college, but that guy had some enormous numbers, had some approaching 50 tackles for loss. A kicker. We may have seen the end of Mason Crosby as a Packer.
Oh, yeah, the venerable veteran.
Man, Crosby. He's got more white hair than you do.
I know, man. Come on, he's like Jason Hansen from Detroit. He's been there forever. Highest scoring Packer, I assume.
I believe he is, historically. Yeah. I think he's got more than Sterling Sharp. I forget who he beat. Anders Carlson, a kicker from Auburn. Now, I don't care if you get your kickers down south. You can get those pretty much anywhere. They got a good leg. And in the seventh round, I'm not sure. This might have been Mr. Irrelevant. Is the 232nd pick, is that the very last pick of the draft? Carrington Valentine, a quarterback from Kentucky, seventh round. Oh, no. Can't be, because we had one more pick after that. Couple more. Three more. So I don't know what I'm talking about in regards to total number of picks. Another seventh rounder, Lou Nichols III, a running back from Central Michigan. Seventh rounder, Anthony Johnson Jr., a cornerback from Iowa State. And another seventh rounder, Grant DuBois, a wide receiver from Charlotte. So does that count? Up to 13? It must. 13 picks. That's a lot of picks.
Are you happy with the trade, with the Rodgers trade?
No.
Who in the positions they got and who they drafted. No, you're not.
No, I told you I wanted the kid from Ohio State in the first round. Go get yourself a burner. Put a little pressure on the seams. I mean, between Watson and the other burner, I don't know about this Reed kid, this slot receiver we got out of Michigan State. But I got to tell you, if you've been playing on grass at Michigan State, you've been playing in the Big Ten, you ain't as fast as the players from the SEC. They've been playing against a better quality of athlete. Big Ten, it's been down. Look it up. 844-967-2789. Let's get back to politics. A happier Monday happy hour is next.